These freedoms of expression and worship, of access to information and political participation, we believe are universal rights. They should be available to all people, including ethnic and religious minorities, whether they are in the United States, China, or any nation.
That's President Obama speaking at a town hall meeting with Chinese students in Shanghai this morning as part of his week-long Asia tour, and supposedly one of the times when he became most frank in his discussion with students. We're rejoined by Mary Kay Magstad. She's China correspondent for PRI's The World. Good morning again, Mary Kay.
Good morning.
So what we just heard right there, as you said, was the time when he was able to speak most openly about potentially controversial topics, correct?
Well, that was one of the points where he hit human rights in the course of his hour-long town hall meeting. And there are certainly human rights advocates who would have liked to have seen him hit it harder, to have actually talked about some of the issues within China. But it was clear he was trying to walk sort of a fine line between not wanting to totally annoy his host before he's even met President Hu Jintao and making his point. And later on, when he got to talking about the importance of the free flow of information and of not censoring the internet, not censoring information, he did kind of get more to a central point that does affect China.
This reference to ethnic and religious minorities, is that kind of a polite version way of bringing up the Uyghurs?
Bring up the Uyghurs and the Tibetans, both.
Right.
There have been crackdowns in both places over the last couple of years. And when it's brought up, the Chinese government generally says, mind your own business. It's an internal affair. And what President Obama was saying, somewhat obliquely, but saying nonetheless, was universal or human rights are universal rights, and they belong to ethnic minorities within China as much as they belong to people anywhere else.
You were saying earlier this hour that the Chinese kind of like to keep control of these kind of press events, and President Obama got a certain amount of concessions from them in leading this town hall meeting. So is there no precedence for this kind of sort of open, supposedly open discussion with people in China among other past presidents?
There is a precedent. When President Clinton came here in the 1990s, he not only met with students, but he also actually had a joint press conference with then-President Jiang Zemin that was broadcast live. And at that point, during that press conference, President Clinton brought up the Tiananmen crackdown of 1989 and said that basically, in history, China will be shown to have been on the wrong side of history in having done that. And since then, I think China's leaders have become a little more cautious about letting Americans have quite so freewheeling a platform to state their views.
I can imagine. One of the things I'm sure that the president will be talking with the president of China tomorrow is currency. We know he's going to talk about that. We're joined also by David Barboza, Shanghai correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
So we've heard a lot about the problem with currency, that they have been linking the yuan to the American dollar, which means that many people criticize the Chinese for supposedly devaluing their currency as the dollar goes down. Explain very quickly, why is this a problem, and why would the Chinese want to devalue their currency?
Well, it's been going on for a long time. Actually, they had pegged the renminbi to the dollar for decades, and they sort of released that peg in 2005 as a concession that they wanted to be more market-oriented. In other words, the demand of the market would determine whether their currency was weak or strong. But once the financial crisis hit, they again kind of quietly pegged it again to the dollar to sort of hold it stable to help their exporters. And as you probably know, I mean, having a weaker currency helped your exporters. Having a stronger currency helps your importers. If you're importing oil or other things, you have a higher value currency, it's cheaper. But if you're helping your exporters, you want a kind of a weaker currency. And many other major currencies are more market-oriented, like the dollar, and it depends on supply and demand. But China wants is an export-led economy. It's driven this growth mostly through helping trade and helping the exporters of the Chinese factories and even the American companies who are in China exporting from here. And so that's why they want a weaker currency.
Right. So, Mary Kay, can the U.S. force China to appreciate the currency? Can anyone in the world force China to take action on this issue?
I don't think force is the right word, but encourage, certainly. And President Obama has been hitting this point several times already during his Asia swing, where he's been saying, look, the world can't continue to look to the American consumer to drive their economies by by buying exports, cheap exports from places like China. China should encourage domestic consumption. China should look for other ways to grow its economy. And the Chinese government will likely move in the next year or two, when it feels that things have stabilized a little bit, to loosening up the restraints on the yuan, on the renminbi, and letting it float a little bit more. It was always floating within a narrow band and against a basket of currencies that included the euro and the Japanese yen. They'll probably move in that direction again, but they'll do it when they feel that domestic conditions are right, the same way that the American administration makes decisions, makes financial decisions to some extent on what's best for the American public.
Well, Mary Kay and David, let me just ask you directly, David Barboza of the New York Times. It seems to me that the dialogue on this currency question has shifted, and that maybe it's a recognition that both countries, the U.S. and China, are way in over their heads. They've made this kind of deal, and they have to live or die by the dollar. The Chinese hold way too many dollars to be terribly flexible in their policy, and the U.S. is way too indebted to the Chinese to have much leverage here.
That's right. That's right. And that situation is why this time around, Washington or the Obama administration they have less weight in arguing for the Chinese to do something about their currency, because right now we need the Chinese to buy treasury bills and to help finance the U.S. debt, the increasingly large U.S. debt. And the Chinese now feel kind of emboldened that they have a lot of clout, they have a lot of sway, and they can say, you know, wait a minute, we want you to fix your own fiscal problems and don't throw it on us and make us throw out our migrant workers out of work. So we have kind of like almost a little mini currency war going on. The U.S. wants a stronger renminbi, and China wants a stronger dollar, because they're holding their investments in a lot of dollars. So it's a kind of like a just mini war.
Well, we'll see what happens. That's David Barboza, the Shanghai correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Also, Mary Kay Magstad, China correspondent for PRI's The World. Join us from Beijing. Thanks to both of you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.